What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.
Welcome to Top 5, where apparently our swords catch the light and they go what?
Ching!
This week on Top 5, I'm tired, I shouldn't say this all the time. I'm not tired of saying it because I'm glad that so many of you love Top 5. But unless it's something that we've come up with for some special occasion, every Top 5 is a listener suggestion.
Yeah.
Which I like. I really like that. But I get tired of saying, well, this is a listener suggestion. But
listener
yes,
suggestion. It's a long distance dedication.
A listener wrote in and said, hey, man. Actually, he didn't say hey, man. Probably said
hey duders.
Or hey, podcast guys.
How's it going, dudester?
Hey, hello, Steve-ster.
Hello, future person, that kind of stuff.
Steve
no, not
Areno?
Everybody calls me the Steve-ster. Steve Areno, maybe.
Steve Areno.
But they
you're
said.
You're not into the whole brevity thing?
Hey. Oh, so. Okay, digression. Before we even get into the topic this week. So Matthew loves to be called Matthew instead of Matt. He doesn't like it when his name is shortened.
Oh, I hate right. that. I hate it.
He hates it. I don't really care. Someone could call me Steve Areno, Steve whatever. Growing up, because when I was born, Steve was like one of the most popular names. Steve Stephen.
Because of the $6 million man, dude.
Probably, although, you know, when we were born, $6 million man hadn't come out yet.
No, that was future
people. But in my high school of 200 people, there were six of us named Steve Stephen.
Steve Stevens?
Steve Stevens. And there was even somebody there whose last name was Stevenson. His name wasn't Steve Stevenson, but
Steve Stevenson.
There were six people in the high school. All with the name of Steve or Steven. Mm-hmm. And most of them used the shortened version, Steve. And so to differentiate so that I knew who people were talking to when they were yelling down the hallway, I just said, just call me Steven. That makes it a lot more sense. And so for me, I don't care what you call me, but if you're wondering why I go by Steven instead of Steve, it's because of high school. Cursed, cursed high school. So now you know.
We had pointed out before that especially in the Major Spoilers podcast, that the three of us have easily shortened names, and we do not go by the shortened versions of our names.
We prefer them very strongly.
Please don't call Rodrigo Rod or Rigo. Yeah.
Or Rigo. Yeah. Well, Rigo you can kind of get away with as long
my
as
my youngest
he's not
is called Rodrigo Rigo a couple of times.
Yeah, and that's okay. Because
and then Rodrigo fled the state.
I did. Right I was away. Like, this child is too cute.
Hi, Rigo.
I can't handle it.
This
my
week's
boss
top
actually
five.
Asked us all to use our names at work, but people keep shortening it, so I won't.
To ma'am.
Yeah.
Hopefully, it won't get in. And I get called ma'am all the time. I'm fine with ma'am. You can call me ma'am. You can
this
call
week's
me
top five. Top five ma'am. Names we go by, but don't. This week's
my
top five.
My name is Barry L.
Top five anime shows. Can you guys do a show on your top five anime shows or series? And I will start off in the year 2000. I was in California, and it was a Sunday morning, and I was just back from the, was it Carl's Jr.? Yeah, Carl's Jr. that they have out there. I loved it because
like
their breakfast.
Heartbeats only with a different star.
Their breakfast burritos are made with like a real tortilla shell, real eggs, scrambled eggs, and real slices of bacon. And so it was like the and real cheese, too, sprinkled in there. It wasn't some kind of processed slab of cheese. But I would go every morning and get two of these little things. And then I'd go get my car wash. And I'd come back one day and I was eating and I turned on my TV and I turned on to like the Fox Kids channel, I think. And there was this thing that looked like Pokemon, but wasn't Pokemon because these kids would get sucked into the Matrix and there would be these monsters that they would fight battles with. To stop some crazy thing. And the weird thing was, they were never showing the episodes in order, or I forgot what time it was on, and I could never find the show again for like three more weeks, and then by then I didn't know what was going on with the story. But Digimon, Digital Monsters, For some reason, I just got
champions.
Yeah, that's, I just got that's sucked into the show.
Right there.
Yeah, Digimon, digital monsters.
Don't do it; it'll be stuck in all our heads.
But there was just something about this show that I really loved, and I think when it was not the first it wasn't the first series; that was the second series where they're all like in high school and they're getting back together again. They have to get the gang formed together again, and there's weird stuff going on all throughout Tokyo. I really got a kick out of that series. And it was just one that I sat around for a long time just going, man, I like that show. I visited again when it's like the seven series or something like that. It's not as good. But, man, that first and second season of Digimon, Digital Monsters, really, really good. And it was one of my guilty pleasures because it was, technically a kid's show and not a grown-up anime, which is what I'd basically grown up on. So that's my number five, Digimon, Digital Monsters.
Digimon are the champions.
Yes, they are. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number five?
My number five is a show that was formative. It's very important to me. So I'll preface it by saying that I watched the show when I was still living in Mexico. And the important thing that you need to know about anime in Mexico is that it doesn't come through the United States. We get shows from Japan directly. So certain shows which get to the United States much later come through Mexico first. Some shows that the United States doesn't get at all come through Mexico. So there's a show, an anime series, that was hugely popular in Mexico and has never really made that much of a splash in the United States, I think because it got here too late, basically. And Dragon Ball Z had already stolen all the eyeballs. This series in the United States is primarily known as Saint Seiya. Latin America and other places, it's called Knights of the Zodiac. And it is ludicrous. It's about a bunch of martial artists who are each kind of aspected to the Zodiac. So you have the Pegasus guy and the dragon guy, and like basically the main arcana of the Zodiac are like these super duper champions. So your Taurus guy is like very strong and your Sagittarius guy is very strong. And it's mostly about guys in cool armor doing martial arts and punching each other. And they pull on the armor and the armor like explodes, like it looks like the actual thing that it represents, like a balance for Libra or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, but also it's armor so you can put it on and stuff. There were toys that went with it, and people in Mexico loved it and hated it because it was also, it's also very violent. Like, they just knock the crap out of each other. Really nothing that you wouldn't see in any other anime. I mean, it wasn't particularly violent for anime because there's some messed up stuff out there. I wouldn't put it anywhere close to Akira and how like messed up the violence is, for example. But it does have guys basically killing each other with their fists, which is a big deal. So there was a lot of outcry, which only made the show that much more interesting for children. It's like, oh, what is this thing our parents don't want us to see? Saint Seiya, definitely an important part of my childhood. And I still kind of draw like armor, like when I draw it, it's still kind of weirdly based on Saint Seiya stuff. It's actually good times.
Very cool. Matthew, what do you have for your number five?
I want to take you back, faithful spoilerites, to a time we call 1993.
And I ran.
Which, wrong. Incidentally...
Wrong decade. It's actually Informer, a Scooby-Dooby-Dooby-Dooby-Blam, a Fred and Barney too.
When they actually brought Knights of the Zodiac to the United States as a network thing, they made an attempt and they actually put the Bowling for Soup version of I Ran as the cover, the title track. Terrible.
Wow. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Although Bowling for Soup, I do enjoy Bowling for Soup.
Yeah.
The band not actually having to bowl for my supper.
Come back with me, Faith, before the rest.
Okay, 1994. 93.
It's 1993. It's Hayes, yes, Kansas. It's a terrible, terrible little dirt spot by the side of the road, and there,
oh, it's gotten
in
better.
A small blue garage, a proto form, a nascent awesome Matthew used to live with utter disaster in a place that he never forgave me. The day we were to move out, I accidentally kicked a hole in the wall and cost us our damage deposit. But that's not the point about this. The point is this: we didn't have cable for a while, And what had happened was we were just watching whatever we could get our hands on. And one of the things we got our hands on was a videotape of a movie that turned out to be adapted from an anime series. And it was not only one of my first examples of anime that really, really spoke to me, because again, 93, I don't think I'd seen Akira yet. I may have, and
you
was
probably
like,
eh. Did because I had that. Well, someone had a copy that
would have been right about
they
that
brought
same.
In from Japan.
I remember seeing Robot Carnival at a party at Leroy's house around the same time. But the one that stuck with me was also my first experience with translation and transliteration of Japanese into English. In Japan, the show is called Shinzo Ningen Kyashan. The movie that I saw was called Kashan Robot Hunter. The anime is called Kashan Robot Hunter. And I saw this. And here's the thing about Kashan or Kashan, depending on how you look at it. It's really visually striking. It's got the big pointy helmets that I think of. He's got like cool arbor and cyborgy things. There's more cyborgs coming in my list, so stay with me here. But it's this cyborgy thing and kind of a, you know, future crap sack world gone wrong. And I went and I tried to dig up some of the Kashan that it was adapted from. And I didn't like it as much as this movie that we had watched, but I did still like it. It was, first of all, it was from the 70s, which is my era. That's my time, yo. But it's the story of this sort of kind of, is he an android? Is he a cyborg? Because in Japan, you stick a human mind in an entirely robot body and they still call it a cyborg. I'm not sure how Victor Stone feels about the whole thing. But he has these superpowers, which, hey, right there, I'm in. Sell me. Superpowers. I'm fine. Good. He's got like a robot dog. And he fights against these evil things. And he is called a neo-human, which is from Neo, meaning the one.
Yeah.
And human, meaning something that the Ferengi used to say.
Human. So,
but Kashan Robot Hunter, the movie, really good. Kashan Robot Hunter, the anime, also kind of okay. And I don't remember specificity of the plot, but I remember sitting and going, God, this is party. This is beautiful to watch. And they have these moments where it's just like, and you know that noise that anime sometimes makes where things are like, I love that.
Very cool.
What the hell was that? That sounded like the helicopters from Apocalypse Now.
Saigon.
I'm still in Saigon.
You know,
Harrison Ford will be here in a moment.
I think there's actually a Kashan live action movie somewhere.
I have heard that. I've also heard about a live action version of one of my later ones that I'd kind of like to get my legs under.
But until we get to that, let's do our number fours.
Number four.
My number four is a weird. It's not really weird because it's set.
Wait,
like
does in, it go?
Kind of. Yes.
Okay, cool.
But it's set during kind of like an Edwardian time period. But there's magic. But it's not magic. It's alchemy. And there are these two brothers, Edward and Alphonse Ehrlich. Or Elric. Their mother
Ulrich
dies.
Ulrich von Lichtenstein.
Their mother dies, and they try to use their alchemy powers to bring her back. Now, the rules of alchemy or magic in this world are you can transmute things, but you have to give up something. It's called the law of equivalent exchange. But you're never supposed to do it on humans. You're never supposed to transmute humans. And the spell that they try to do backfires. Edward loses his leg. Alphonse's entire body is destroyed.
Oh, no.
Edward then sacrifices his right arm so he can basically trap Alphonse's body into a suit of armor. And the other thing is he never grows up. He never ages. Edward will never age. But
did he lose his soul or something?
No, he didn't lose his soul. He
That's
just
the only
ages.
Thing he didn't lose.
Right.
Okay.
So at least Edward gets invited to become a full metal alchemist. That's the ranking in the military.
Oh.
And he and his brother go on adventures. It's been a while since I've watched this. In fact, I don't think I've seen the last major story arc in this because this is one of those times where it's like I was devouring anime on DVD. And our local store had not gotten in the last arc or it had come in and someone bought it ahead of me. So I don't think I've seen the final arc on this, but it is an interesting story. It is Full Metal Alchemist based on the anime is based on a manga series, which I read the first volume and I didn't find it as interesting, although a lot of people really like the manga version. But I like the anime of Full Metal Alchemist. Go
Hagane
check it
no
out.
Renkin Jutsushi.
Yeah. Have you guys seen this?
Yeah.
I remember I've a guy watched. Named Roy Mustang.
Yeah.
Is that this?
He's one of the guys. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Then I've seen at least a little of it.
Yeah. I've actually seen all of Full Metal Alchemist. I haven't seen, I haven't watched Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Which is, they made a whole series again because kind of like we're getting to Game of Thrones now. They started making the anime before the manga was done. And eventually the anime got past it and it just went in a different direction. And now, so if you watch Full Metal Alchemist without any subtitle, that's that. If you watch Brotherhood, it's supposed to stick tighter to what actually happened in the manga.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, don't the two universes collide?
I don't think
so. At the end of one
so.
Of them? Okay. I thought at one point they were like in a different world.
They are.
Back. Okay.
But that's definitely one of the movies I think goes into that territory.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Those are once it got into Brotherhood and then the movies, I haven't seen those, but the first series really got a kick out of it and really like, and it's still sitting on the shelves today. Full Metal Alchemist. So Rodrigo, what do you have for number four?
My number four is something that I've watched a lot and comes from a very well decorated studio, has a good pedigree, but I really like it because really the main reason why I like it so much is because it's like just blatantly and kind of offensively anachronistic. It's Samurai Champloo, which is a story about two samurai and a young girl basically trekking across the Edo period Japan, set to a hip hop soundtrack. It's pretty crazy. The characters are really cool. You basically have like two polar opposite samurai, and that you have like a really kind of brash, like kick you in the face kind of guy, and then you have like a very like measured, like kind of like a classic samurai that you might see in a Kurosawa film. And they're kind of they really want to kill each other, but they both kind of catch each other in that they make this simultaneous promise, and they can't kill each other until that promise is fulfilled. So it's really good. The animation's really good. The design is really good. Not just the character design, but kind of in general, everything is really pretty. So yeah, definitely Samurai Champloo. Just check it out. It's good times.
Very cool. Matthew, you're number four, please.
That one used to make me mad because the people I worked with called it Samurai Shampoo.
Yeah.
And then I had to yell at them, and it just...
It's actually pronounced Samurai...
My number four, and this is very, very important, because when we have these top fives and we do the things that we do in the top five, and I'm like, oh, sure is top five. We're going to have some top five fun. Sometimes I feel old. I'm like, oh, all the stuff that I love is from like 1972. But
some of it's my number four before that.
My number four, that's because I am a well-rounded individual who appreciates and understands the history of pop culture, Whitey. And my number four comes from the 21st century. Bitch, please. Oh, it's about to get ugly in here.
Good Lord.
Cover the children's ears, faithful sport. No, never mind. My number four is from the year 2009.
2009.
But only became an anime. An anime, of course, is the Japanese word for animation. But, you know, when we said anime, I'm like, okay, it's got to be animation from Japan. Because I wanted to do Aeon Flux. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be totally cheating.
I would probably have allowed it, though, to be honest.
See, now you tell me. So my number four is Aeon Flux. No, my number four, actually, I just started seeing like I think this year or at the very tail end of last year. And it is also a superhero type story in the fictional world of sort of not quite the future, where monsters come down and crash on Earth. And they're like, arr, 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 arr. And all the superheroes are like, I will defeat the monster. But the most powerful superhero of all is a boy named Saitama, who can defeat them all with one punch. He is One Punch Man. He is so powerful that he's bored at being so powerful.
This just came out when, like a year or two ago?
The actual manga series is like 5 years old. I want to say the anime started either like the end of last year or maybe the beginning of this year.
I have not had a chance to watch this. I want to because people are just talking about this like crazy.
Yeah, and it's really, really interesting stuff. The design work on it is what really sells it, because he's a superhero basically running around in a tracksuit. Mm-hmm. But he just looks kind of like this goon. And he does his thing, and he punches the living hell out of things. And I kind of appreciate that. It's really almost a deconstruction of it. Now, I have a problem when I watch these things is I tend to watch them subtitled rather than dubbed. And that's basically because I like to hear the original translation. But it also means that sometimes when you're listening to the emotion in the voice, you're not actually reading subtitles. So I may not have a good idea of what One Punch Man is actually about. But I'll tell you what, I really enjoy it. And I think that, you know, first of all, from the 21st century, which means I'm not old and irrelevant. But more importantly, it kind of represents a Japanese take on an American superhero story, which is fascinating to see. It's like seeing the stories of your Superman and your Iron Man through the lens of another culture entirely. And it really is wonderful to see basically just this punch clock guy who is so powerful that he's focused on everything else in his life because, you know, one punch. Dude, one punch.
One punch, man.
One Punch Man. And that's where they get the name. And that's why the song is called Alice's Restaurant.
Moving on
to
number three.
Don't get used to that 21st century because it ain't coming back.
Okay. My number three is a weird one. It is one that when you watch it the first time, you're going to be super confused. And when you watch it the second time, you think you kind of know what's going on, but then you're still going to be confused. It's about the third or fourth time you really start to figure out all the themes that are going on in this, like loneliness and mental illness, what is reality, what is communication. It is very interesting. And when it comes to collecting original anime cells, this series is the one that I have the most in my collection. I think I have 10 cells from this show in my collection. Yeah. Serial Experiments Lane, which is... it's hard to explain. This girl starts essentially communicating with her computer, with the Wired, and she becomes part of the Wired, and she starts having a life inside the Wired universe. Beyond that, I couldn't tell you very much more about it because, I mean, there are some really interesting themes that go on in this. It's so well done. It's just, it's one of those where... I think I binge watched the entire series in 2 days. And I just is like my friend was a friend from Brazil had, I was working with. He's like, if you like anime, you should watch this Serial Experiments Lane. I was like, what is it? And he let me borrow his copies. And at first I watched the first episode. I was like, I don't know about this. And he asked, and then he's like, well, you should just watch it all the way through. I was like, okay. So the next weekend I sat down, started with episode one again and just blew through the whole series. And by the end I was like, holy crap, this is awesome.
That's the one with all the conspiracy theory stuff.
Yeah. There's conspiracy theory stuff and what's going on with her and is the Wired really alive and do people live in there? And yeah, so there's stuff about God and religion mixed in with this. It is just
crazy avant-garde artsy thing.
Yeah, there is a whole sequence where it's like, I don't know what this is. But then the theme song, and I'm just trying to figure out, remember who did the theme song for it. But it's this brother-sister group. And I've got a couple of their albums based on this. Let's see. It's
wow.
Yeah, but Bao, B-O-A, is the rock band. And I ended up buying a couple of albums of theirs, importing them, because I love the theme song that they did for the English version of this series. So Serial Experiment Lane. It's really weird if you can check it out. I don't know if it's on Netflix or iTunes. It probably is. But mm-hmm. if you've got some time and you want to have a really mind-altering experience, then this is the series you should check out. Yeah. Rodrigo, you're number three.
My number three is one that I watched very recently. And I started watching it really expecting not to like it. And I was just like a thousandfold, like so pleasantly surprised. This is an anime that I started watching because on Netflix, when you flip over it on its little square, there's a picture of a guy holding like this really cute cartoon pig. And my girlfriend was like, that pig is so cute. So we started watching Silver Spoon and...
Oh, with Mario Mino Pelucci and
Ricky Schroeder. Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys smack.
Yep. So, no, it's cool. So this is the story of Hachiken, who is a high school student, and he decides to go to high school at an agricultural high school. And it's basically this huge rude awakening from someone who is urban going to an agricultural thing. And of course, it got me right in the... I don't know, some relevant organ, because when I moved to Kansas from the city, I started doing agricultural stuff and I didn't know anything about it. So I really kind of empathize with Hachiken, because it is a rude awakening to figure out where your food comes from, to be okay with a lot of the stuff that happens in the food making process, and kind of come out the other side knowing it and appreciating it and all of the work and time and effort and science that goes into it. And then on top of it, it's actually a really cute story about, you know, a high school student kind of coming into his own, having a lot of insecurities and working through them. So yeah, I just did not expect to like this show as much as I did. My number three, Silver Spoon, is on Netflix right now, and it's by the same creator as Full Metal Alchemist.
Cool. So I did look. Serial Experiments Lane is available right now on Hulu if you want to go check it out there. And I figured people knew where to get Full Metal Alchemist and Digimon, because those are probably a little bit more well-known than Lane.
Digimon are the champions.
They are. Matthew, what do you have for number three?
My number three. Remember how I said to forget about the 21st century?
Yes.
My number three comes from the days of my youth.
Okay.
When I was told what it means to be a man. And really, as much as I hate to say it, usually I'm the guy who's like, I prefer the original. There's something about the English version of this show that I saw that, you know, well, first of all, I was a kid and kids love things, and this was a thing that I loved. But also it had a kick-ass theme song. And the theme song goes like this. There's a prehistoric monster who came from outer space. And then the prehistoric monster is like destroying everything. And what are you going to do? What are you going to do, Rodrigo? What are you going to do?
Summon a robot?
Call Tobor the Eighth Man. Tobor the Eighth Man. Known in Japan as just plain Eight Man. Which is a better name? I will grant you that. Tobor the Eighth Man is a little on the nose. It's robot spelled backwards. Stay with me here. But Eight Man, in America, known as the Eighth Man, is the story of another cyborg. And by that, I mean a robot with a human mind in it, who works for the police. And the manga is entirely different. But the cartoon, the anime that I saw when I was younger, and I want to say it was in the 70s, but it may have been, gosh, I don't even know. It may have been the early 80s. Yeah, I was young. Let's put it that way. But the cartoon feels very much like the old Fleischer Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in black and white, at least the versions that I saw.
I've seen this too. Yeah.
It may have been a black and white television, to be honest, but yeah, it's very, I don't know, very attractive to that young, that youthful eye. And if you actually look at the animation is amazing. Just really freaky stuff. And supposedly, Ape Man is one of the influences on, of all things, RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, the fascinating thing about it is everything that I think of as anime, when I think, what's an anime, it goes right back to here. And of course, you know, my next entry on the list, which we'll get to in a moment. And it really does strike that chord where, even translated into English, there's something about it that is not quite the culture that I grew up with, that I'm used to. And I think that actually adds to the appeal. Plus, guy's got an 8 on his chest, which means that if you're ever trying to do a list of 10 heroes with numbers on their chest, you got a number 8. Ooh, wait, write that down. Okay, good. Just right off the top of the list. So my number 3, Ape Man or Eighth Man or Tobor the Eighth Man. Go listen to the theme song on the YouTube. It'll stick in your head for days and you'll want to kill me.
Digimon, digital monsters.
Digimon are the champions.
My number 2 is another one that I kind of stumbled across because people are like, hey, you kind of like this weird stuff, hey, Steven. You might want to check out this anime.
You're a weirdo. Here's a weirdo thing for you three.
And I was like, oh, okay. But then after I started watching, I was like, holy crap. This is like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea meets a better version of Disney's Atlantis.
So it's like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea meets 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Well, Atlantis is more Journey to the Center of the Earth than anything else, but...
Which is 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
No, that's two different things.
It's the same movie. And it's also The Black Hole. Disney just did the same movie over and over.
Oh, my God. It makes total sense now. Nadia, the Secret of Blue Water, follows this guy. It's set in a parallel universe to ours in 1889. A little teenage girl, Jean, and a little fringe inventor guy. They go on this big adventure. And... they discover Atlantis and they discover these forces that are conspiring basically to throw over the world. We find out more about Nadia and her secret that she has a connection with the stuff. Basically, if you've seen Atlantis, you know what Nadia's deal is. Interestingly, the creator of the Disney Atlantis movie said he had never even heard of Nadia until after they had completed production on Atlantis, and then someone had brought it up in one of the Usenet Rec Arts group things.
And they'd never heard of Kimba the White Lion before they did The Lion King.
Well, they may not have, but here's the thing. I like Nadia so much that I may have called into work sick for 3 days in a row so I could watch the whole series. I have never done that before.
So what
it was always like,
is...
I was like, I'll binge this on the weekend, but then I'd got this on like a Sunday or something. And I was like, oh man, I want to get through it. And it's really deep. I forget how many episodes there are. 39 episodes.
It's a water joke.
39 episodes in the series. Wow. And I was like, I started watching on a Sunday, late Sunday. And I was like, oh, I'm going to call in sick tomorrow so I can watch this.
So you're saying that the series made you Nadia as well.
Oh, yes.
Nadia than you were before.
I have never done that before, but Nadia, the Secret of Blue Water was so good it was worth taking 3 days off work to watch this nonstop.
I did that once and got engaged.
Well, there you go.
Is that a Studio Gainax thing?
I don't know. The series was created by NHK, Toho, Korad, with concept by Hayao Miyazaki. And Gainax is the directed by Hideo.
That may be Hideo, why I'm thinking of Gainax.
Hideaki
Anno.
Yeah, that's the director of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really good. And it's, it kind of has, a lot of it has that kind of a big eyes, small mouth thing that you see a lot in anime, but it feels super, super modern. It doesn't feel like it's an 80s thing. It was done in the 90s. But it really feels very modern. The animation is really, really good and the story is fantastic. So go check it out. Nadia's Secret of Blue Water. That is my number 2, which brings us over to Rodrigo and his number 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, this is my number two is a show that I started watching actually on the recommendation of D&D Brian.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was like, hey, you gotta watch this, man. And I was like, okay, so I watched it. And I was really impressed. Just the art direction in this show is incredible. It's one of those things where you look at it and you're like, this is really cool. And then later on, it shows you that all of these artistic choices that they were making for particular aspects of the show are actually plot relevant. They are like baked into the plot, and it actually makes even more sense why all of these like crazy choices, like crazy, very distinct choices were made. I'm talking about Madoka Magica, aka Puella Magi Madoka Magica.
You've talked about this one a couple of times.
We have, yeah.
I think we have.
And so Madoka Magica is a deconstruction of magical girl type anime. Kind of in the, basically Madoka Magica is to magical girls as Evangelion is to Mecha.
Oh.
So... yeah, and it'll punch that's right through you. I would actually put Madoka Magica higher since it actually has an ending that makes sense. Unlike
Space Penguin.
Yeah, unlike anything that you would ever get from Evangelion.
What's wrong with a Space Penguin?
Well, congratulations. In any case, Madoka Magica is this incredibly solid, just so sad, such a sad little show in just the best possible way. There is a movie out there that condenses it amazingly. There's also like a sequel movie which exists. But definitely, if you want to have your heart torn out by cute little magical girls, I strongly recommend watching Madoka Magica.
Very cool. Matthew, you're number two.
My number two is one that I'm almost certain we've touched on before. In fact, part of my brain is going, did we do top five anime before? But nevertheless, I don't think we did.
I don't think so.
In any case. And it doesn't matter if we did. It's been years. Obviously, things have changed. My number two dates back to one of the earliest portions of my life that I can remember, discounting my mother's constant protestation that I could describe the room I was born in to her. This was probably 1974, maybe? And I clearly remember watching TV, and I clearly remember seeing Underdog, and I clearly remember seeing the Go Go Gophers, and I clearly remember seeing how every single episode the hero of this anime series translated to American audiences in English killed a man in the opening credits. And every time that happened, my brain went, that's not right. But I was four, so it was like, that's not right. But in any case, every week the music comes in and the horns go da 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 da, and then the car goes vroom and Speed Racer crashes into a guy and the guy dies and he blows up and he burns to death in the side of the road and Speed's like, haha, I won the race, haha. But I remember being terrified. Well,
what about Racer X? Speed Speed's brother.
Speed Zelda brother. Yeah. I was terrified by the ending of the episode, the first part of the Mammoth Car.
Mammoth Car, yeah.
Because they did that camera shot where the Mammoth Car was about to drive over you. And it was like, and it was going to kill you and eat you and you'll be crushed to death and I don't know, all sorts of terrible things for a four-year-old's mind. But as it's known in Japan, Maha Gogogo, or Speed Racer, is just this really bizarre, strange, fun adventure. And the American dub does add some weird stuff to it, but there's already a race car with a monkey in the trunk. So, I mean, and that's not a euphemism either. That's literally what happens. I will tell you, right now I am sitting within inches of two separate replicas of the Mach 5 in two different scales. If you go in my office, I actually have one that's about 6 inches long from when the movie came out a few years ago. I have a 1/8 scale, big, giant Mach 5. I don't have the Speed Racer figure that drives it, but I have that car with all the toys and accessories. Ghost Rider, my action figure of Ghost Rider, usually drives it because
nice.
Why not? Yeah, I thought so. But just the imprint that this show has had on my mind is that all cars should be white mm-hmm. and pointy.
Yep.
Yeah, and the thing that's really great about it is that even the ridiculous, ludicrous plot points somehow work. And you try and figure out, why aren't Chim Chim and Spritel dead from deceleration? And you try to figure out, how did those guys actually make a car out of gold that didn't immediately fall to pieces? Or the acrobatic racing team, first of all, physics, not a thing in the Speed Racer universe.
Nope. Did Definitely you watch that not. Movie?
The movie I saw, and I honestly didn't hate the movie.
I didn't either.
For what it is.
People hate that movie, but I think that movie's actually a lot of fun.
Yeah. For what it is exactly what it was supposed what it was supposed to be, which was a live action version of a crazy ass anime series.
Mm-hmm. The thing that's great, though, there's that sequence in the movie where they're talking, and it's a talking sequence, and it's talking heads, but they're driving. Mm-hmm. And so you see them like sliding back and forth and doing these power slides, and the camera is just sort of there, and they're moving back and forth in the frame as they race, having the talking head dialogue. It's beautiful.
I also remember watching, if we got dropped off at the babysitter early mm-hmm. enough in the morning, we'd be able to catch an episode of it. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting in front of her big giant TV with a bunch of other little kids, 3 and 4 year olds, and maybe even younger than that, but definitely between the age of 3 and 4, definitely. Sitting down and watching Speed Racer and everybody flipping out about all the car racing stuff.
Yeah. There is an unsung hero in the world of Speed Racer, and that man's name is Peter Fernandez. Peter Fernandez was the voice of Speed. And in order to get the things that he said to match the Japanese inflection, because they did not redraw anything. They forced him to go in and talk like this so that he would fit the thing. Ha ha. Peter Fernandez was incredibly charismatic and funny and understandable while trying to fit everything else into the house music. The already pre-written hand movements was just beautiful. That man and the director and the people who did the vocals on that show should get little hats, and they should say, "I survived Speed Racer. Ha ha." But Speed Racer, my number two. And I think, you know, when you say anime to me, I think Ape Man. I think Speed Racer. And, of course, I think my number one, but we'll get to that in a moment. Yeah. But Speed Racer is really one of the quantifying cartoon experiences. One of the earliest TV-type things I remember is Speed Racer.
It was probably about a year or so ago, I was singing the Speed Racer theme song. Mm-hmm. And the boys were like, "What is this?" And I was like, "You don't know Speed Racer? You don't know Speed Racer?" And even my wife was like, "You mean like Racer X?" And I was like, "Yes." And I said, "I bet we can find this online." And sure enough, it was on Netflix or Hulu. "Just watch the first episode," which I think isn't it the giant the big car,
the mammoth car? The mammoth car may be the first episode.
I think it's the first one. And I was like, "Watch this crazy episode." And I figured they were only going to watch one episode, and then they were just going to drift off and go do little kid things. But I came back like an hour later, and they were still watching more Speed Racer.
Yeah, the mammoth car is like in the first couple. I think the first one introduces Racer X. Secretly, Speed's elder brother Rex. But you know, the thing that's really great about it is Pops Racer.
Yes.
Has like 5 children.
Yes, he does.
And one of them ran away from home and became a masked madman, and one of them is asleep in the back of his race car. There is something wrong with Pops Racer, dudes. This man is not, he's not all there. He may have inhaled a few too many fumes is what I'm saying. But yeah, I was playing this tonight for the widget, and she's like, "That movie was so cheesy." And I'm like, "Oh, you have no idea. Come watch a man be murdered."
Their wiki page does not, the Wikipedia page does not have the listing of the shows in order.
Aww.
That's too bad. They've got all the family members. They've got all the vehicles that you'll see in there. So right. It does have the mammoth car there, but for some reason, I always remember that as being the first episode that I ever remember seeing of that.
It's definitely one of the most memorable episodes. Yeah. It's certainly an iconic episode. Well, there's Speed.
Yeah.
And then there's his brother, Spritel.
Yeah.
And then they have, I think they have another brother whose name is like Sparky or Speedy. No, it can't be Speedy because he's named Speed. I'm going to say Sparky. And then, of course, there's secretly Speed's elder brother, Rex. I forget what his name is. You know what's really great about it, though?
What's that?
They all have M's on their clothes.
Yes.
For no reason in America. Because Mahagogo is not their name in America.
Right, exactly.
So I was always really freaked out that Racer X had this big M on his chest. So it's clearly after a point that I could read. So it's about 1973 or further on. There you go. Okay.
My number one. This is one that I came across at the store where I was picking up my DVDs. And I talked about this before. But I picked up the first volume and said, okay, people have talked about this. I'll go home and watch it. Went home and watched it. And over the course of the weekend, I kept going back to the store and buying more and more of the DVDs so I could have all of them because I was just loving what I was seeing. It takes place in the year 2071. We've colonized space. And there's bad guys out there. And if you got bad guys running around in space, you're definitely going to need to have some people go and round them up. Space bounty hunters. So we get introduced to Jet and his partner Spike, and later they're joined by Faye and Edward and their little dog Ein, and they have fantastic adventures, and it's super, super sad. There's huge backstory arcs.
They spend a whole episode tripping on mushrooms.
They just spend a whole episode where some space fungus gets to them, yes. Cowboy Bebop, not only does it have the most fantastic theme song of any TV show ever of all time, I'm looking at you, Cheers. Cowboy Bebop is fantastic. And I said that I had Serial Experiments Lane anime cells, and that was the one that I have the most of. Mm-hmm. I actually have several original Cowboy Bebop cells. Anyone care to guess which one is the most expensive?
The Faye one?
Faye Valentine is the most expensive one.
I'm sure.
And it's nice because it's actually nearly a full body shot of her, which that and the close-ups are the most expensive ones. And then the Spike Spiegel one is also, I've got like two of him that came out really, really well. I was just able to snag them at a low point where suddenly people weren't buying the anime cells anymore. And I was just like, crap, I'm spending the money on these because I don't know when I'm going to get a chance again. But yeah, Cowboy Bebop, fantastic show. We actually did started a series of live commentary things on Cowboy Bebop that eventually, I guess, turned into what we have now over at our VIP site, our bonus tracks where you can go and listen to us make commentary on movies and such. That's all over at
Major Spoilers. Faye Valentine. With your safe search off.
Oh, I'm sure it's fine.
Apparently, there's a young lady of a certain persuasion who has taken the name.
Oh.
And uses it in her professional cinematographic.
I'm on the Google right now with my safe search off, and I see a bunch of really nice anime Faye Valentines.
She has the purple hair?
Yep. Yep.
Gotta
it's
have
really
the
good. The one that I have is not her in her traditional outfit, but the first time that we're introduced to Faye Valentine, she is a casino dealer. She's disguised as a casino dealer. Mm-hmm. I have her in that casino outfit.
Nice.
Which is like super, super hard to find because she's only in it for like half of an episode.
Yeah, it's like finding an action figure with a weird paint job.
Yeah. So
like very, that very Starman cool. with the beard.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So that is my number one, Cowboy Bebop. If you haven't seen it, why? If you want to correct that, watch now. In fact, it's funny that this came up in the topic for top five because just the other day, a couple of months ago, it was released in HD on iTunes, and I went ahead and bought it. And I was just about ready to start watching it again when this came up on our list. So there you go. Other thing that's great about Cowboy Bebop, not only the theme song, but all of the music in this, by, what is it, Kano or whoever does the music for it?
Yoko Kano.
I have all of the albums that were ever produced from Cowboy Bebop from the music just because it's so good. And again, this was before iTunes. So here I am importing these super rare CDs from Japan that have like four songs on them, but they're from the Cowboy Bebop universe. So it's really cool. I love that show so much. Rodrigo, what do you have for your number one, which you also love so much?
I do. Oh, Cowboy Bebop, by the way, from the same studio that does Samurai Champloo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cowboy Shampoo.
Yes. So my number one. I talked about Madoka Magica being a deconstruction of magical girls in the same way that Evangelion is a deconstruction of the Mecha show. My number one is kind of the next step in media, right? You have things played straight, then deconstructions, then eventually this kind of like reconstruction celebration type situation. And that is Gurren Lagann, aka Tekken Toppa Gurren Lagann, which is a show that is just like high octane, ridiculous mecha action. starring larger than life characters, and it is a show that, you know, kind of with minimum or with some amount of spoilers, starts with characters that are literally underground that get progressively more powerful until they pierce the very cosmos. And this is over the course of like 12 episodes. Like, this show moves really fast. It's got great characters. It's really ridiculous. Tons of cheesecake if you're into that. A big kind of like early episode plot twist or twist that you might not see coming. And then it's one of the few shows too that does like a time jump in the middle of it and actually executes it well. I've watched the entire thing probably 3 times, and anytime anybody's like, "Hey, let's watch some Gurren Lagann," I'm totally down.
Yeah.
Cool.
It has some mild problematic aspects, like the aforementioned cheesecake. There is a character who is very clearly gay who maybe is not portrayed in the best possible way, but also not the worst possible way, I guess. It's excusable to a large degree.
Could be worse.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, an actor on TV, right? To kind of counter that. Gurren Lagann is nuts in the same way that like Evangelion spends a lot of time being like, this is why you need to plug a mech to the main power grid. Gurren Lagann, and that makes it great. Gurren Lagann is great because it's like, these mechs don't actually fit together, and they just kind of like smash them together, and it's like, somehow this works. You know?
That's great.
It's just, yeah, I really, really strongly recommend it, especially if you're a fan of over-the-top action. Kill la Kill is very popular right now. It's actually by the same studio that did Gurren Lagann.
Cool.
Very nice. Matthew, your number one, please.
Come back with me, Faithful Spoiler. It's to the year 1978. You remember in 1993, we were all smooth-voiced. It's 1978. Mm-hmm. We're eight. So we talk like this.
E-A-Y. Night.
I remember very clearly losing an argument about this show.
Okay.
On the playground in maybe the fifth grade.
Oh, man. Must have.
Fifth or sixth grade. And horrifying. The reason why was simple.
Okay.
We all wanted to be the cool leader type. And we were all arguing. We're like, no, I get to be him. No, I get to be Mark. And then my friend Mark went, dude, I'm Mark.
And so who did you get to be?
Oh, who do you think I got to be?
Princess?
F you. This is the thing. Steven knows what I'm talking about. In the year 1972.
Yeah.
1972, there was a show, Science Ninja Team Gatchaman, which came to America a few years later as Battle of the Planets. And the opening music is epic. I played it tonight, and my wife, who is a known enemy of joy, sat up straight and threw her arms in the air and went, yeah, and danced along. The thing about Battle of the Planets is, if you're the right age to have seen it, it was like nothing we'd ever really seen
before. It was totally trippy.
It's super trippy. And the thing that's really great about it is it's the beginning of Super Sentai. This predates Super Sentai with the team of five guys in helmets. It predates The Magical Girls, sort of, kind of, maybe not, but, you know, in the little bits and pieces of it. The actual origin of Magical Girls goes back to Bewitched around 1966. But, you know, the Magical Girls as we know them today, and like the Precure and the Sailor Moon configurations.
Sure. Sailor Moon like is 80s, and that's really what kind of like coalesced the genre.
Yeah. But when you look at Battle of the Planets, basically what you've got is this weird, cool, more cyborgs, and they each have their little like spaceships, and they're combining mechas.
What came first, Matthew? Was Battle of the Planets or the Super Sentai came first?
Battle of the Planets,
yeah,
came first by about 5 years, and season 15 of Super Sentai, Chojin Sentai Jetman, is a flat out homage to Battle of the Planets.
Okay, because whenever I first saw Power Rangers, I was like, why are they doing Battle of the Planets?
Yep, that is exactly what it is. And the thing that's really great about Battle of the Planets, as it was dubbed in the 70s in America, was they took a series that was really kind of adult and had some darkness and some weird stuff to it. And
there's a character who's transgendered or transsexual? I forget.
Transgender,
transgender.
Birga Katza.
That they totally rewrote out of the series.
Well, they did a really weird thing. They kept the character, but whenever he was in female form, they wrote in that this is his identical twin sister,
mm-hmm.
who looks basically like the same character, because the character actually is the main villain in America known as Zoltar. And they have just a whole mess of weird stuff that is what they call a widget, a weird Japanese thing that they tried to translate into English and make perfect sense. And it didn't, but it was still glorious to behold. And this is something we talk about, questions of representation. This may be, I think, the first time that I ever saw a hero who was built in a manner like I myself was at the age of 6, 7, 8. The pilot of the ship doesn't get as much play, but he is the physically strongest and one of the most powerful members of the group. And he drives the van. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
Tiny in America, I believe Ryu the owl.
Yep.
In the Japan. But when you actually hear the opening narration or that opening music and you're the right age, you will jump up and down.
Yeah,
it is a physical fact of nature. And the song sounds a little bit like Super Friends at the beginning, mm-hmm. which is even better. But then when it kicks in and the horns kick in and you're just like, ooh, and it has really amazing voice work.
Who's the person that did the voice work, who did the voiceover that said, that introduced the show? Was that Peter Welker?
That was Bill Woodson.
Oh, okay.
Bill Woodson did the big voiceover. The main hero, Mark, was voiced by Casey Kasem.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie Schell, from Gomer Pyle USMC and many voiceover gigs, was the second in command, Jason, the crazy guy. The thing that's really wonderful is one of the characters, Keop in America, he was dubbed with this weird speech impediment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because in Japan, he cursed like a sailor. So when they translated him over, the things that he said didn't – it's another, you know, Peter Fernandez, a speed racer. They didn't have enough going in there to fill the whole space because he didn't say a whole lot. But apparently, you know, they did lots of entertaining things. Plus, in America, they added R2-D2. Or Seven Zark Seven.
Oh yeah, Seven Zark Seven. That's right.
And the great part was they'd have these big climactic moments where everybody's in great peril, and they cut back, and Seven Zark Seven would be like, "Needless to say, no one will ever be hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone will get out fine. A yuck." And that was actually their way of writing around some of the more difficult plot points.
Mm-hmm.
Was cutting back to the robot and having him go, "Huh, everything worked out fine." Like, you know, that episode of Friends where Phoebe's mom stops the movie.
Yeah.
Right before old Yeller gets sick. It's literally that in cartoon form. But yes, it's been dubbed for America like four times, I think.
Yeah. Sure. I want to say like.
It came back around in the 80s.
It did. Well, yeah. It ran in 78 and then again in 85. And then.
As G-Force Guardians of Space.
Yeah. And they actually. And I think Channel 41 mixed them together. They would actually run. Sometimes it was G-Force and sometimes it was Battle of the Planets. And you had to listen to the narrator because if you knew which one, if you could hear the narrator talking, you knew which version you were watching.
Right. And then in the 90s, Saban got a hold of it and did a super campy dub called Eagle Riders, which I'm not going to say he urinated on my childhood because that's rude and my childhood is fine.
But
it was not, it was not a good show.
Also in, I want to say like 2003 or four, they re-released in America the original Japanese airings of the show, which that's where you got to see all the with all the crazy stuff that was going on.
Yeah, so there are like very 20 episodes that didn't get adapted at all. And of course, the death of a major character didn't make it into the American dub, which is kind of sad. But Princess didn't die. Princess will live forever.
Yes, she will, because she's fantastic. Oh, it's so great that you had Battle of the Planets.
Yeah.
On your number one list, because we're going
to
wrap it up there. Top five, always five, acting as one, dedicated, inseparable.
Invincible.
God damn, I love that show. Listeners, head over to majorspoilers.com.
Let's go
share
watch that
your
show
top
now,
five
guys.
Anime. We love to check it out, and we love checking all the things that you share with us over there at majorspoilers.com. And until next time, remember, everybody loves a list, including G-Force.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Visit Major Spoilers at majorspoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.